Busy few months. Some good things.
Okay, so I'm moving on to our next day of Bereishis in the next mishap, as it were, of Bereishis. I think we have this one, and then this is the sixth day we're talking about now. On the seventh day is the creation of Adam and Chava, which had their own issues, and then we passed at least this section of our shir. So today I want to focus on another interesting topic. If you look at the front page of the packet, we're in Bereishis Perek Aleph, and the actual bracketed pasuk was from last time, but it's the same page. So if you just skip down to pasuk Chaf Aleph, so this is Hashem creating. So the fifth day of creation. Hashem is creating the fish and the birds. So it says Vayivra kimas ataninim hagedolim. Hashem created the large taninim. So taninim, we could translate loosely as the large fish that you can envision, like, you know, whales or great white sharks or something. And all of the different living beings that they go through the water to their species, and all the different flying birds to their species. And Hashem saw that it was good. So what stands out about this pasuk is something very strange, is that we've singled out one species called Taninim HaGedolim. Meaning the Torah could have just said Hashem created the fish and the birds. Like it says, He created the animals, or created the chayos, or the behemos. Why are we singling out one type of animal? What the tanin is itself is kind of mysterious, what we're referring to. But usually things are just in general categories in Bereishis. That's what everything else in Bereishis is. And then suddenly it says Hashem created the trees. It doesn't say the cedar and the oak and the spruce. It just says trees. So why are taninim singled out? So we always like to go to the more simple understanding and move to the more complex understanding. So just to go with the simple understanding, the Ramban says that being the taninim hagedolim are so large, let's picture like the blue whale, the largest animal on earth, right? The blue whale. So it's humongous. It's enormous. And the Ramban says, therefore, when we speak about these large sea species, we want to attribute that directly to Hashem's greatness, Hashem's power. It says, V'yivra Elokim es taninim hagedolim ad Elokim, meaning that Hashem directly created these large fish. And this is to show the praise of Hashem that these animals that have such power and such size, these are Hashem's creations. I mean, nothing is beyond Hashem's creative ability, as it were, and these get attributed with their own special, unique mention to Hashem. I would add in, furthermore, we say, Mad Godlu Masecha Hashem. We often praise Hashem for the greatness and the variety of His deeds. There's two psukim there. Marabu is there's a variety of Hashem species, and Magadlu is that they're very, very great or big. So when you look at certain species on earth that are just very, very large, the immediate reaction should be, Magadlu, Hashem, how great, how large are your species? So the pasuk wants to kind of highlight that point. So on the land, you look at like an elephant, like a rhinoceros or something, you say, wow, that's humongous. And then the ocean, you can look at especially whales, but any large ocean mammal, they have the giant octopus or the giant squid or something, or certain types of sharks, they're just humongous, a whale shark. You look at these things and you exclaim, "Magadlu Masecha Hashem," and that has to be highlighted in the pasuk because that's something which is so large and so powerful in our world. So that's one simple pshat. However, it's still funny because we're trying to highlight Hashem's great creatures, great creations. I mean, even the smallest of Hashem's creatures are incredible. Every single animal, every single plant contains within it incredible niflos habore, Hashem's wonders, complexities which go beyond that which we can even describe scientifically these days. Everything is extremely complex. So single out beings because they're large doesn't quite fully explain the pasuk. You can look at a worm and see Hashem's greatness. You can look at an ant. You can look at a regular fish, not just the big ones. You can look at a salmon or a tuna, or a mackerel or a goldfish, and see Hashem's greatness. So what is it about these taninim which are so special? So this is where we're going to come back into Rashi again and look at the Medrash that speaks about this. So if you look at Rashi on the bottom left column, it's the second one I bracketed off, opposed to Chaf Aleph. So Rashi says, HaTaninim, Dagim Gedolim, there's these large fish, Shebeyam, that are in the sea. So that's the simple explanation. If a Divrei Agada, and then in Agarata, meaning the more Medrash-like explanation, it says it refers to who? Levyasan uBenzugo. That the word Taninim refers to the Levyasan and its mate. And Shabram Zachar and Akiva, that Hashem initially created the Leviathan with a male and a female. Vaharagas and Akiva, then Hashem killed the female Leviathan. Umachal Tzadikim Lasid Lavo, and salted it to preserve it for Tzadikim in the future. Shem Yifru V'Yirvu, because if these were to procreate, Lo Yiskayim Ha'olam Bifneim, the world cannot exist before their size and their greatness. So that's what Rashi says. So suddenly a whole different twist on this pasuk, you know, a very difficult and interesting twist. But there's some creature we've heard to often called the Leviathan. We're familiar with it more to be some form of reward in the future, whatever that reward may be. You know, Chazal always described this great Suda where we sit around, we eat Leviathan and Shor HaBar and drink the special wine. And we can't take things literally. I mean, it doesn't mean we're sitting at a wedding meal with like steak and wine, and that's not the description. We're talking about things that are spiritual. The Rishonim and the Maral, they discuss at length that you can't take these descriptions to be just physical foods. There's something more to them. So maybe we'll discuss that a little bit. But the Pasuk here, Taninim, is referring to, according to the Gemara and the Medrash, refers to Leviathan and its mate. And this is where we find what I would call, again, the mishap of Bereishis. Because it says Hashem created both and had to kill one off. And again, it's a funny thing. If Hashem wanted there to be Leviathan in this world, then Hashem will create them as it needs to be. And if they're too dangerous, then Hashem should only make one of them. The fact that Hashem created both and killed one off, I mean, did Hashem make a mistake? He thought they could exist inside and they couldn't exist. And then this one should be salted away for the future, and this one should remain in the world nowadays. And that implies that one's still swimming around or something. Maybe it died because it couldn't reproduce, and then it just died off, and that'd be the end of the species. I mean, the whole description is needs a lot of explanation. And what does it mean? And they even point out there's a remez in the pasuk to this. The actual word taninim, if you look at the word, it's written in plural, but it's missing the second yud. It could have been spelled tuf nun yud nun yud mem. And that second yud is not there in the text, which implies that even though there were two, now there's only one. That's why the second yud is missing. So you have a remez in the pasuk to this concept that there were two, and now there are one. Had it said tanin, that would have been only singular. Had it said taninim with the yud, it would have been there are two now. Missing that yud implies that there were two, and now there's one left. So we have to explain this somehow, what exactly we're referring to. So I have to confess, you know, I this is a very deep and difficult idea. I don't have all the details straight myself, and then we'll explain what we can. Leviathan is mentioned a few times in Psukim, particularly in Eov and in Yeshaya it's mentioned. Leviathan is mentioned a few times in the Gemara and Midrashim, again discussing the reward in the future. Most of us are familiar with it from the Tefillah you say in your Sukkah, the end of Sukkot. If you look at your Machzor on Sukkot, at the end of Sukkot, you say a tefillah in your sukkah, may it be your will, Hashem, next year we'll sit in the sukkah of the skin of the Leviathan. And for us, it sounds strange. We're going to sit surrounded by fish skin. It doesn't sound too pleasant, but that's a description of future reward, and we have to know what exactly are we describing with that. So I don't know if we'll get every detail down, but at least we'll try to get a general concept. Also keep in mind, you know, many Mepharshim describe this from different angles, different directions. I'm going to take one approach, but this is not the only approach, and there are many other approaches to it as well. But we'll take one that I found that spoke to me, and at least give us, you know, some insight into what we're talking about over here.
I'm sorry, yeah. I would like a piece of paper.
Yes,
you
sure.
Want? Thank you.
I get you.
You have your thank you very much.
It's too much to fit on the little margins over here.
Thank you.
You want to lean on this maybe?
So let's take it slowly and try to understand it piece by piece, and maybe we can pull some idea out of this description. So the word Leviathan itself, it comes from the root word Levi. So Levi, we know as the Shevet, his name came from the pasuk Ata Yove Ishi Olai, that Leah said, "Now that I gave birth to my third son, my husband will escort me." The word Levi, Levaya, Melavis, to escort somebody, to connect, to be connected with me. Unfortunately, in our minds, Levaya has a negative connotation, but Levaya means to escort somebody, that you're connected with them and you're escorting them out. And Levaya could be positive. You're supposed to escort out your guests. It's the same idea of Levaya, Melave. It's the same concept. So the idea of Levi or Leviathan implies a concept of escorting, connecting, being together. That's what those words mean. So other than meaning a large fish, the idea of Leviathan has a much deeper connotation to it. Let's put the fish aside for a second and just understand what the concept of Leviathan could mean. The word Leviathan, it refers to, as a whole, the drive of human beings to want to connect to one another, connect to Hashem, to connect to the things beyond ourselves. Again, put the fish out of our heads for a second and just think of the word as a broader concept. Every single person has in them the capacity and the drive to be nischaber, to connect, to misdabek, to cling, to connect to others and to connect beyond ourselves. The Hashem Yishmul, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes, he says that Levyasan hu ava udvekis, the word Levyasan implies love and dvekis and clinging, cleaving, from the Lashon Yove Ishi Alai. From that same Lashon that Leah used, that my husband will now cling to me because I have my third son. So there's this power in the world, this drive in a person, this capacity that we all want to connect beyond ourselves. That is a concept referred to with the word Levyasan. Beyond that, there's a very kind of a funny pasuk in Tehillim. We say it's Kuf Aleph. We say it in Rosh Chodesh, Barchi Nafshi, and it says Levyasan Zayat Sarta Lasachek Bo. It says Hashem, you created the Levyasan to play with. And it's again a funny thing. Hashem plays around with the Levyasan. That's like his little pet fish, and he says go fetch and catch and heal. What does that mean exactly? What does it mean Hashem plays with something? And that doesn't make sense to us. So for this, look at the second page of the packet. Rav Huttner and Pachad Yitzchak, in a different context, he discusses the concept of what does it mean to play. When Chazal, or when the Tehillim described as playing with something, something being an object of play or delight, what is it describing? The most famous pasuk is Nelulei Sarascha Shashuai. If not for your Torah, which is my toy, which is my delight, my plaything, I'd be lost in my own oppression. Azavati ba'anyi. So look at the very bottom. I put a bracket there. Heilucha bazeh mehuri b'hachinyana. Mahu ahevdol bin pu'ula shel sha'ashuim. What's the difference between an action that we would call, let's say, playing, l'shar minei pu'ulos, as opposed to other actions, shanu malim behem esolomeinu, that we fill our worlds with? I mean, some things we say, this is my shashua, this is like my play or my delight. And some things are just things that we do. How do you describe, the essence of the difference between these two things? Pula shel shashuim, b'steinus b'zeh matramatarasa inena nimseis mechutzala. So something which is a shashua is something that its goal is not outside of it. Kim tzmuna v'chavuya b'socha panimis. The goal, it is the goal. Meaning I'm not doing it for some other purpose. I'm doing it because I want to, because I'm enjoying it. Right now, this is my goal. In yanam shel shashuim ena nogim lemaisa. Things that are shashuim, it's not because I have some other goal in mind. I'm not trying to do anything beyond. I'm just having a good time. And this is my goal, is to have a good time right now. Stam pu'ula mechavena sal nifal menu v'al v'yada v'il pu'ula shel mischak. And this is what it means, a child's playing. Lo davar hanifal kima pu'ula v'atzmi mischak. It doesn't mean it's causing something else. But the thing I'm doing itself is my delight, is my joy. We don't say, the child is working. A baby is playing around his toys. He's doing work. We don't say that. We don't say he's busy. We say he's playing around. He's playing. Because the child has no further goals besides right now I'm playing and having a good time. That's the child's goal. So everything a child does is in the realm of playing, because that's what children do, and there's no further goal through the playing. It's just that I'm having a good time, playing around with my toys, and that's it. So we say, Lulei Sarascha Shashuai. That description is that the Torah for me should be like a toy, meaning that I'm learning and I'm performing mitzvahs and learning because this is what I'm doing. Not for some other purpose, something else, beyond me. This is just my goal, this is what I want to be involved in now, and this is what I'm focused on right now. That means I'm playing around with it. So if you want to take this back to our question, we say, L'vyasan zeh tzarta l'tzachek bo. The goal of l'tzachek, of tzchok, or shashua, is just to enjoy it as is. It's not trying to get beyond. Rather, so the Levyasan has this implication that this is what I want to do. This is what I want to connect with. This is my delight. This is what I'm clinging towards. The goal is that my object of my desire is this. So when I say Hashem is playing with Levyasan, I'm not sure what that means exactly, but it shows that the concept of Levyasan has to do with playing. I mean that I'm trying to connect with this. This is my goal. This is what I want to do. I'm not trying to get further beyond anything else. But this is my delight, right? This is my desire right now. So I put it in other words, the sum total in this world of desire, of trying to connect to others, This is described by Lev Yosson. That's what it describes. Meaning there's this powerful force, we'll call it. Forget the fish, but the fish is a huge powerful thing. It's a powerful force in the world, which is so powerful, and it overtakes us because we're all trying to connect, and we're all trying to move beyond ourselves and connect to Hashem and to other people. And that's the idea of Lev Yosson in a general sense. So this is this massive koach in the Bria, in the world. And it moves the world. You know, people function because they're always trying to be able to reach their desires, to connect to their goals, to connect to things beyond themselves. And that's what pushes us. That's what pushes us mostly in life, to produce and to keep on functioning and moving along in our everyday lives. So that's just the sadly step one, understanding a little bit of this. But then it says that there's a male one, there's a female one, and the female is killed and salted away, and the male still seems to swim in the oceans. So what's that describing? So I want to base what we're saying on the next piece here in the packet, which is the Perush of the Akedas Yitzchak. The Akedas Yitzchak was one of the Rishon, Rav Yitzchak Arama, lived in Spain around the time of the expulsion. He has a very beautiful Perush on the Torah, but people don't learn it so much because it's very long, and we don't have patience for it. But when you see him quoted, he always says things which are very, very beautiful and deep. So he describes the idea of the female and male with Yosson. I think what we'll do is read some of it inside, and then we'll try to explain more what he's talking about. So just to look at the bottom left paragraph, I put a bracket there. Humash Amru Zal Perkamokar Sasvina, this is what the Gemara says. Alev Yosson Shenivra Zachar Nekeva. Shesiris is a Zachar, Vaharukha Nekeva. It says that there, the lust of Augustine was created in male and female. The male was sterilized, and then the female was killed and salted away for the future. Kilfia Nira, in Lev Yosson, so it seems to be that the idea of Lev Yosson, the Maimar Zeh, at least in this context, Lehemu Chibur HaSeichel Ve'achomer Brias Adam. This is the connection of the Seichel of the mind, Ve'achomer, and the physical in the creature called Adam. This is the idea of male and female. So this is the idea of male and female in the world. So he's taking the concept of Lev Yosson and saying this connects to the idea of men and women in this world. This is what the Tilom means. Lev Yosson is the start of the Sachik Bo, that this is the Hashem made the Yosson to play with. This is a similar idea. Then he says further, the next point is the really important point. Hashem saw that if the two of them would procreate, they would destroy the world. This is explained. If the intellect was totally overtake, if the taiva sakoach hamisorer, meaning that the physical body would overtake the intellect, then the intellect would be totally null and void, and the physical body would take over. If the other thing happened, if the intellect took over the physical body, then everything physical would then be null and void, totally. So neither one by itself, if it overtook the other, could the world exist. So then he describes further, I'll just describe it outside, that Hashem then took these two, and he was able to make it in a way that the two different, the male and the female, can kind of moderate one another. So it's described by salt, the killing one and salting it. We'll talk about what that means. But they're able to, instead of having one overtake the other, they kind of are able to make sure that keep a balance. That's what he describes at the end over here. So kind of a philosophical, interesting, conceptual thing he's describing. Let's explain what he means, maybe in a more in terms we can relate to more. But he says there's two things here. There's two ways we connect beyond ourselves. There's the mind, and there's the body. Let's discuss how we connect with both our minds and our bodies, and then we'll try to understand what his point over here. So chomer, the physical body, it refers to the physical connection of people. So primarily we find this in husband and wife, but the concept overall of taiva, and it means connecting to others, connecting to food, the way the physical body connects beyond itself. The physical body's desire, what it needs, what it wants, desire for comfort, desire for food, desire to procreate. So this drives us to connect to things beyond ourselves. We connect with these things, and you know, we base our lives trying to work towards them. it's a level of dvek, it's a level of clinging to something beyond ourselves, but it's totally of the body. Animals do the same things. Animals also have these drives to connect to things. The animals need to procreate, and they also need food and comfort and shelter, and they want to be able to reach beyond themselves to connect to all these things. So this is the idea of the physical connection. But then there's the seichel, there's intellectual connection. And we know very famously that the word das also means connecting. Veda adam es chave ishto, the marital relationship was referred to as das, as connecting, because primarily you want to connect with your mind, not just with your body. And we know that das is used as a term to connect in a very intense way. So you connect to others through the intellect, through talking, understanding each other. Friendships are built on this. Hopefully also marriages and relationships with family are built on this as well. But it's the idea that you're using your mind, your intellect, to connect to others around you. So you can connect with the physical, or connect through the intellect. The question is, well, what's the balance of these two things? And the way that the Akedas Yitzchak is describing it, he's saying that the Chazal mean here a very, very powerful point. That if one were to overtake the other, the world would not exist. If the intellect totally controlled, then the world would be gone. If the body is totally controlled, the world would be gone. Neither way could the world exist as Hashem wants it. Without that. So I want to show a few connections between the mind and the body, and then maybe we'll try to understand this a little bit more. If you look at this, your pages are out of order, but if you look at, we'll flip two pages, this is the Rambam. It says on the top, Kedusha Hilchos Esure Bia Perchav Beis. It's this page over here. I didn't mark off the piece, but if you look at the very bottom. So, look at it. Let's look at the very last three lines at the end of the middle section here. So it's in Halacha Chaf Aleph. So this is Surah Bia. It's talking about forbidden relationships, and the Rambam again discusses the idea of people having desire and lust for one another, physical passion, physical desire. And the Rambam is discussing how does one control physical desire. And the Rambam says at the very end, he says, "Gadol mikol zos." You know, the greatest way to control physical desire, Amru, they said, "Yifna atzmo machshavaso divrei Torah." A person should focus their minds and their thoughts on Torah. V'yarchav daito b'chachma, and expand your mind with wisdom. Shemachshavas arayos miskaberes, because the thoughts of inappropriate relationships do not overtake a person. Abolev panui min achachma, unless the heart is empty of wisdom, meaning that wisdom and the drive for arayas connect to one another. Wisdom and drive and physical drives connect to one another. The chachma who omer says about chachma, ayelas ahavim v'yalas chen, etc. It says about chachma that chachma also has a beauty to connect with, and chachma is something which the love will always overtake you. But the Rambam is telling you that these two arenas of connecting, whether it be the physical body, which is he's describing through arayas, physical drives and lusts, or whether it be the intellect, they work together. And they balance one another out. And somebody who's having drives which are inappropriate in terms of the physical, it's because their mind is empty of chachma. And if someone wants to combat that, they should fill their minds with chachma, connect in with wisdom, and that'll help the body not have these lusts. But these are two different major forces in a person. And really in the world, this is what drives people, the intellect and the body. These two things that drive people in the world. People, whatever they accomplish in life, usually one of these two things are pushing them and driving them to get there. And these would have to be dealt with. So if one overtook the other, then they would destroy the world. So why is that? So it's very simple. We think through it. And this is what the Akedas Yitzchak is describing. If the physical body did not have the mind to keep it in control, picture like animals. Animals will fight to the death over a mate or over a piece of meat. Right, because there's no das which is driving them. There's no sense of, okay, my mind says this is not wise to fight over a little piece of meat. My mind says there's another female lion down the block I can go date. It doesn't say that. The body says I want this female lion or I want this piece of meat, and we're going to fight to the death until we get there. Unfortunately, some people who might have certain psychological disorders, they don't have the ability for their mind to control their actions, and they're very dangerous because nothing holds them back. Because most healthy human beings have a seichel that keeps them in line, so they don't let their physical body make them do things that are totally crazy. Sometimes people do, unfortunately. People do end up killing each other over relationships or over food. But in a normal, typical, healthy human environment, the seichel is able to moderate the body, and therefore we don't do these things which would destroy the world. But that's true the other way as well, because if the mind overtook the body, so then that would mean that the body would become totally meaningless to us. The mind would be what drives us totally, and then people would not reproduce. People wouldn't live physical lives. People would live totally intellectual and spiritual lives. And also the world would not function as Hashem wants it to function. So either way you look at it, whether the body took over the mind, if the mind took over the body, the world is doomed. If the body takes over the mind, then we're going to just kill everyone else out to get our meat, and the whole world's going to be destroyed. If the mind overtakes the body, then we're all going to live these lofty angelic lives, but no one's going to farm, reproduce, or do anything in the physical world, and the world's going to fall apart. So both of them would be problematic. Just as a mushel, we do find individuals living lives like that. So unfortunately, you find the animalistic lives, that's one. But you find individuals who also live lives totally based on the mind, on the seichel. For instance, and this is the next Rambam, go back to that previous page. The Ramban says such a thing about Eliyahu HaNavi. If you look at, this is the Ramban, this page over here, sorry to number them, and I bracketed it off the middle of the page. It says, Oskim b'mitzvos me'ava kedin, b'karoi miske olam. It's people who perform mitzvos properly, and they also function in the world. So it says they get lots of reward, because so the Torah's standard and ideal for regular people is that we're involved in the physical world. We do our best to connect with Torah mitzvos with love and with devotion, and that earns us much reward in Olam Haba. But then he says, but some people who leave everything of this world, I mean, they totally connect with the seichel and they ignore the physical. And they don't care about the world as if they're not even physical. And their entire thoughts are always on Hashem. Like Eliyahu Navi. And they totally cling to Hashem's great name. They will live forever in their bodies, like Eliyahu. And Eliyahu HaNavi, his body became holy. And Eliyahu never died because his body became so holy, he didn't need to leave it behind. He could take it with him because his body became spiritual. But we see that there are people, he brings some more examples, that they live lives which are totally of the intellect. They ignore their physical bodies. And the body becomes kadosh. That's a very high level for certain individuals. But it's not a way for the world to exist. This world can't exist that way. If you look at the next page, two pages away, the Rambam talks about Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam compares all other prophets to Moshe. So this page is Hilchos HaSodei HaTorah on top, Perek Shvi'i, and I'm going to look at the bottom in Halacha Vav, the very last paragraph in the bottom here, Halacha Vav. So the Rambam is comparing Moshe to other prophets, and he says at first that other prophets, they got the message from Hashem through dreams or through visions, and Moshe got direct communication. That's number one. And then he says, all other prophets, when they received Nevuah, they would kind of like convulse and shake. They couldn't handle it. They collapsed on the floor. And Moshe could speak to Hashem, like we're speaking right now, just face to face, very, very easy. You know, no problem. Moshe could handle it. And then, just trying to find the right quote. Next page. Go to the next page. Very top of the next page. It says that Moshe could speak to Hashem whenever he wanted to. Other prophets had to wait for Hashem to speak to them. So if you look at the third line down. So it says that El Kozman Shiachbat Ruch Kodesh Lov Shaso. Anytime Moshe wanted, Ruch HaKodesh would dress him. He would be enveloped in Ruch HaKodesh. And he would get prophecy. He wouldn't need to focus his mind with Damenla and get ready for it. Moshe would stand there always ready for prophecy like an angel. Therefore he received prophecy all the time. So when they had a question, Moshe would say, okay, hold on a minute, let me ask Hashem, I'll get right back to you. He had the direct phone line. And this is what Hashem promised him. Hashem told everyone else, after Har Sinai, go back to your tents, live regular family life. You, Moshe, stay right here with me. All of the Nevi'im, when the prophecy stopped, they'd go back to their own families, and they would take care of their physical needs, like anyone else. Therefore, they didn't separate from their wives, they remained married. Moshe Rabbeinu did not go back to his family life. And he separated from his wife, the Olam, forever. That was the whole story with Miriam and Aaron speaking about Moshe. And Moshe, he separated from all other physical things, and he tied his mind to Hashem. And this glow never left Moshe Rabbeinu. The Koran or Panav, and his face shined. This Kaddish came lachim, he became holy like a malach. So Moshe lived a life where he was totally bound in the intellect, and he ignored the physical. He left his wife, he left physical life, and he was glowing like an angel the rest of his life. So that's beautiful for a person of that level, but that's not regular life for us. That's not what Hashem wants out of the world as a whole. This is a level for great tzaddikim, but not for anybody else. Hashem's will is He wants the world to exist. If everybody was Moshe Rabbeinu, there wouldn't be a world anymore. If everybody became so holy and didn't eat and didn't have children, so then we'd have a lot of angels, wouldn't have any human beings here anymore. And Hashem wants there to be human beings. In a sense, they say that the bracha of the women say in the morning, Shasani Kirtzono. Hashem made me according to His will. So being that the woman is the one who bears the children, involves herself in very much of the physical maintenance of everyday life, that's Hashem's will. Somebody who's just totally in the intellectual realm, floating around, is a very high level. But Hashem's will is there should be a physical world here with families and children and houses and everything and Shabbos food and everything else. So Shasani Kirtzono is a bracha kind of highlighting this exact point, that Hashem wants us to have regular physical lives and live in a world where we have regular, everyday activities. So the Mahalach, this way that Moshe lived, Eliyahu, was very, very lofty. But if everybody did this, it would destroy the world. There wouldn't be a world left as Hashem created it. That would be gone. On the other hand, if Taiva overtook the world, as we said, and everybody has followed their physical needs to connect, so then it would be anarchy, it'd be chaos. Everyone would go after their own selfish desires, and the world would also be destroyed. Everything would be gone. You find the animals will eat their children and eat their siblings and kill and destroy just to get that last piece of food, and that's what the world would be like if we didn't have our minds controlling us. So all that aside, this is the description of the Akedah of the Levyasan. Levyasan, the male Levyasan and the female Levyasan. The male Levyasan is the connecting through the intellect. The female Levyasan is connecting through the body. And these two things come together. If one overtook the other, the world would be destroyed. There'd be no world left. So that's why when it says that they can't reproduce, they can't procreate, that would be the way that the kid is describing it. That means that one's going to overtake the other. It's going to consume the other. And therefore, the world couldn't handle it. The world couldn't handle total intellect. The world couldn't handle total physical. So what do we do? So the Akedah says, if you want the world to survive, these two things have to moderate one another. There has to be a physical body with physical drives, and there has to be intellect which controls it. And that's a necessity. So the Akedah tells us, when it says that it doesn't say that Hashem just killed off the female and got rid of it. It was preserved, meaning that we have to have that aspect of life. It's preserved for us. And we also have to have the male aspect. We have to have both aspects of life. They both have to still exist, but they can't overtake one another. They have to kind of exist together. They have to coexist. They don't become one, but they coexist. That's the way to put it. So neither is able to get out of control. The seichel doesn't totally run away and become this like lofty thing which can't connect to the world. And the physical body doesn't run away and just chase after its own desires. Each thing can kind of moderate the other. And this is the ideal in this world. The ideal in our world as we have it is to have this existence that's very, very physical, but yet very, very spiritual. Very intellectual, but yet focused on physical everyday activities. People always comment, it's interesting, if you go to the Beis HaMikdash, you're going to this very, very, the holiest place in the entire world. And what are you going to see? You're going to see blood and guts and gore. That's what you're going to see. You're going to see people sitting around eating steaks and drinking wine. Right? that was the Karbanos. Obviously, it's going to look very, very holy, and it's going to be done in a very, very pure and sincere and lofty way. But in the place in this world that we look at as the most spiritual, and the high point of spirituality, it's filled with the physical. And it's training us how to moderate how we enjoy the physical, but yet do it in a very spiritual way. So the Kohanim, or the every Jew who ate kachim, you eat pieces of karbanos, and you did it b'tahara, with a bracha, and appreciate the fact that you're partaking of Hashem's food. But it was still a piece of meat. They were still eating a piece of meat. The Karban Pesach, I always comment, looks like a shawarma. You know, because the old matzahs were these fluffy pita-like things, and you put in some lamb, you put in some lettuce, and there you go. That's your shawarma. It was okay to use sauce on it also if you wanted to. So you can put on some tahina, maybe it's kidney, you can put tahina on, but put on some sauce, and there you have your shawarma. But yeah, that was the holiest point of the year, the Karban Pesach. Every Jew sat there eating the Karban Pesach in Shalayim. It was a very holy point of the year, but it was still very, very physical. That's our lives. There's a little Hasidish idea that the term Melech, king, so it could be used as an acronym for Moach, Lev, Klaios, the brain, the heart, and then the kidneys. Now, the brain represents your intellectual drives, the heart is your emotions, and then the kidneys are your physical drives. So somebody who has Malchus, he has all three drives within, but he or she is sure that the brain is on top and controlling the emotions and the physical. You don't want your physical body to lead you, also your emotions. You want to make sure that your brain's leading you. That's a melech. If you're a person who reverses it, if you're somebody who has the kidneys leading you, I mean the physical drives are leading you, and then the emotions follow the physical and the brain follows that, you know, last, so that word backwards is kalim, which means destruction. So either you can be a melech, nobility is that the brain is on top, or you can be, you know, walking destruction if your physical body's on top. And that's but they're all there, but they have to be able to be to moderate each other to make sure each one is able to do what it needs to do. So this is one of the big points about the Lev Yasan. So this model of a fish. Well, why would they use a fish? I'm not totally sure, but there is a concept you find in the Gemara that we describe the idea of a real delicacy is fish. The Gemara says, you know, what is the minimal amount of Onik Shabbos one needs to have? Gemara says it's something called kasada harsana. This a special fried fish dish was like the minimal onig shabbos. Fried fish, that's considered tainug. The idea of fish in general, fish to this very day is still a very expensive thing to buy. It is somewhat of a delicacy, and so it could be that we're talking about, you know, enjoyment and connecting with something which you're focused on and trying to relate to. So maybe fish is that description. I don't know, but that's the description given. But the size of it is because this is such a powerful drive. This is what drives people. This is what makes people function, are these drives. That's what makes us who we are. So it's something which is just this powerful force in the world, so it's described as the Lev Yasan. That's how it gets described. From a very, very different perspective, there's another way to look at it. Now, this is all looking in a very positive way. And we're using these drives to try to connect, to try to do what's right. We need the physical, we need the intellectual, and they kind of work together. So in the flip side, in the world of Ra, you also have these two things. In the world of Ra, of Averos, of evil, so you have the evil of the intellect, and you have the evil of the body. So these are described, you know, I guess the primary evil of the intellect we would call Avodah Zarah. It's a shita, it's a philosophy that is absolutely wrong. That's in your mind. The evil of the body we would look at as Arayus. It's something physical which is absolutely immoral and incorrect and wrong. And those two things, you know, so if you want to look at what's the worst part of the intellect to be Avodah Zarah, it'd be having bad philosophies. And the worst part of the body would be Arayus, bad relationships. Those are those two. Neither of these things on their own really last. So let's say somebody has this philosophy in their mind, but they get no personal enjoyment out of it. So how long are they going to stick to it? Even if they feel, okay, intellectually I feel this is right, but if I feel no personal connection, no personal joy in this philosophy, let's say anybody who fought for communism or for Zionism or for any sort of ideal goal, it's because they had something they wanted to personally gain from it. Nobody is that sincere. I'm going to risk my life for communism even though I personally don't enjoy communism. No one's going to do that. It's because they felt this is how I'm going to build a better world. I'm going to enjoy and feel good for myself. Arias as well. Arias is something which can't last because a person who just is following their desires but knows it's wrong, eventually, you know, the person burns out, they feel guilty, and they want to change their lives. But Chazal describe the very worst combination a person can have that will last is when Arias feeds on Avodah Zarah, vice versa. Like, for instance, when the Jews were at the end of Parshas Balak, says that the Jews were attracted to all the Bnos Moav, and they served Baal Peor. So now you had Avodah Zarah teamed up with Arias, which means that they had the physical pleasure of Arias, and they had the excuse of Vodazard along with it. And those two things together, then they feed off each other. So I have a bad philosophy, and I have enjoyment that bolsters the bad philosophy, and therefore there's no stopping that evil. That's the worst evil possible. And Rabbi Lapiansky said recently, and I think you find this also mentioned in Rishonim, Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai. He sees the Jews worshiping the Egel. So it says in the Torah that he saw them worship the Egel, and he saw the Mechulos, the dancing. So you can ask the question, why did not Moshe have to wait for the dancing to break the Luchos? I mean, Hashem told him already in the mountain that they're worshiping Avodah Zarah. He came down, he saw the Egel. Why is the dancing so important?
Because people can make mistakes. Maybe they would feel they're sorry that they made the Egel, but then they're rejoicing on their
sins. Right, exactly. So when
that made it worse.
Right, when they had the joy to come along with so they had the Avodah Zarah, which was intellectual. They had this joyous dance showing how much they loved it and they enjoyed it. So Moshe said, "This then there's no stopping them. Because once you have a joy along with your bad philosophy, then you're in big trouble. If it's just a bad philosophy, then the person eventually will burn out from it. But if the joy feeds the bad philosophy, if that enjoyment is there, then you're in big trouble at that point. So it's the same connection, the connection of the intellectual with the physical. But there it's not to connect. There it's showing how Ra can carry on. And really the worst philosophies in the world, the way that they continue on is because there's some sort of pleasure that people have in following that philosophy. In the realm of good as well. You know, when it comes to Torah, when it comes to mitzvahs, we have to have both these things. You want to feel good intellectually with Torah, that you understand what you're doing and understand the ideas and understand the concepts. You also have to have joy in your mitzvahs and in your learning. You have to have both. Your body has to enjoy what you're doing. Like we said, there's a reason that karbanos include both the spiritual elements and the physical elements. Shabbos, everyone can relate to sitting down to a good piece of kugel and cholent, and hopefully also the concepts of what Shabbos stands for. Every single yontif has its foods and its sudas, because we always try to make sure the physical body is in line with the mitzvahs as well. Because the body has to be on board, but the mind has to understand what's happening. They both go together. So now if we bring it all back around, it says that Hashem salted the Leviathan for the future. So again, hard to know exactly what that means. We're talking about enjoying the Suda Leviathan. But it seems to be that there's going to be a level, we're going to reach a level at some point where we get absolute pleasure from the intellect. Meaning that the physical body will have such pleasure in the intellectual ideas that that's going to be our final. The final reward we're going to have is not sitting down for a bowl of soup. That's not what we're talking about. But it's that we're going to be able to understand all the concepts of Hashem and Hashem's Torah and understand the truth of this world. It's going to give us so much pleasure and joy. So Hashem's preserving that pleasure and joy for the future. If Hashem brought it out right now, it would just result in taiva. But if Hashem waits for that right time in the future, where we can totally understand all of Hashem's concepts in this world, so then Hashem can bring out that female of Yasan, which means that then we're going to have total, absolute pleasure from understanding all these concepts. So in this final meal that we discuss, it's not a physical meal. It's like you're eating up the ideas. It's some sort of spiritual experience that gives us total pleasure. The idea of the sitting in the sukkah of the skin of Leviathan, I'm not exactly sure what that means. But if Leviathan is this idea of connecting, so then I would understand it as that it's that concept of all Klai Yisrael kind of connecting in unity together. Because Leviathan is about connection. So to sit in that final sukkah of the skin of Leviathan means they've taken Leviathan, the idea of connecting, and we've used it to connect to all of Klai Yisrael. It's like the greatest image of Avas Yisrael and all the Jews getting together as one. Because again, it's all about this idea of connection. So we connect to Hashem, connect to Torah, connect to our physical needs, and connect to each other. And that's the idea of the Leviathan. So, what does it mean to us? I mean, these are pretty lofty concepts. But what we always say, what's the practical lesson we take away from this? So I would say a few things. I think number one, we have to recognize what makes us tick. Now, the Bali Musar, one of their greatest focuses was always a person has to know what makes him or her move, what drives us, what makes us tick in life. We have to understand that these kochos are these powerful Leviathan like kochos within us. The idea of the mind, the idea of the body, it moves us, it motivates us, it makes us function. Without that, we would just be very, very passive and lazy. But we're always trying to connect ourselves to those things that we desire and we want in life. So we have to understand that what makes us move, and it's the seichel, and it's the physical body, and they both have to be happy. Like we said before, in mitzvos, you're not happy if you just do as you're told, don't understand it. You're also not happy if you understand it but don't enjoy it. You really need to have both in doing mitzvos properly. And it's important for us to strive. We all want to do mitzvos properly. We should strive to include both the body and the mind in mitzvos. I think that's number one. We have to understand that Hashem's will is that we do balance ourselves in this world. If we become too aloof and we ignore our physical needs or our physical drives or just regular everyday life, so unless you're Moshe Rabbeinu or Eliyahu Navi, that's not recommended. On the other hand, if we lose contact with our seichel and we just follow our physical drives, we all know that that's a terrible thing to do. So we have to understand Hashem's ideal of our world, the ratzon of Hashem, Shoshana Kirtzono, as we said, is to have that proper balance and to strike the balance in the right way, that we're not too far out there. We're very, very grounded, but yet we're not swept down by the physical, but yet we're able to work based on our intellect, like a melech. We have to learn how to moderate but properly both these drives. And then ultimately, we have to be sure that the chomer, the physical drives, don't overtake us. That, you know, we're able to say, there's stories of, let's say, different gedolim, that they would, when they sat down for a bowl of soup, I forgot, they tell us about a certain Rebbe. You know, he would take the soup, and he would never tilt his head towards the food. He would always make sure that the food came to him. And he said, I'm not willing to bow down to my soup. You know, something along those lines. They say that there's a concept brought down, it's called the tainus of the Ravid, I think, which is that it's, they say, more powerful than fasting sometimes is to eat what's on your plate, and when you're still hungry, leave over one bite. Right? Because you're showing you're the master over your appetite. You know, so it doesn't mean pile on extras and leave over the extra stuff you're not hungry for. It means you're still a little hungry. You know, you put a plate of food, which is the right amount of food for you, and you leave for one bite, that's it. But, you know, it's hard, you know. And in some ways, that's more powerful. When you're fasting, okay, I'm not eating anything, so I don't have to face the food in my face and then refrain. But when the food's on your plate, and you're saying, you know, I'm the master of my own appetite, no, you're not going to get the best of me, that's showing that your intellect controls the physical, but yet you also had a good meal and the physical enjoyed. It's both. We have to have that. So this is something we have to stay grounded, but yet be in control. And this is one of our greatest challenges, because since we are involved in the physical, it does schlep us in sometimes. And if we totally refrain from it, then we're kind of disconnecting from life. But it's a matter of being able to strike that balance and be sure that we're in control of ourselves. We remain on top. We don't fall into the food. That's our goal. So this is, again, this is not, it doesn't tell you much about a fish. You know, but Levyasan is a much bigger concept than that. And Chazal speak in code, as we've said very often. And Chazal are telling us, in their short description of these two great fish, one being destroyed, one being killed and salted, and one being sterilized and put away, etc., they're describing these great kochos in a human being, which really push us and drive us and make us, and make us function in life. Any questions? Yeah.
She said the male was sterilized, meaning he couldn't reproduce.
Right, that's what it says.
Then the need to kill the female fish?
I'm not sure. I had the same question. I'm not sure. It's a good question.
Okay. But yeah. It also feels like if we need to balance the intellect with the physical, then the female fish would have been left to live, because that's a true balance.
Right.
But killing one isn't.
So what the Akeda says, he says that if they were to live, then they would procreate. And procreating is when they're bonding together and overwhelming one another. So one won't overtake the other. He says that when you salt one, you're keeping them both in the world, but just keeping them separate. That's how he's describing it. So, I mean, I understand your question.
But you're not really keeping both in the world, because one of them, like that energy, is no longer in the world.
Well, it is. It's just being... We're holding off on it.
Right.
Right. We're holding
so
off on it.
Currently, though, it's not. Cause the energy is.
The energy is not there.
The energy is contained, so it's not exactly. I'm right. Just not sure that, you know, I see that.
You're saying that analogy is.
I'm just not. Right.
No, it's a fair question. It's a fair question. I mean, I'll read you exactly what he describes. So let's just go back for 1 second. He says that. So he says that if they both remained, then the one would lichvosh es kochatav, one would conquer the other. Because I guess if they were to unite, then one would conquer the other, and then you only have one controlling. But then he says, now it's just being preserved, and just being held back. But you can still take from it. So, your point's a good point. But I think things which are in our, the way we always understand it, I've actually mentioned this, I think, a while back. Things that are hidden away. That always means, in terms of Chazal's terminology, that we can still draw from it, but it's not out there in an open way. So like that energy is kind of still available to us, but it's not just like in our faces. So I think it means something along those lines, but your point's well taken. It's a good point. Yeah.
One more question.
Yes, please.
Okay, you gave an example. You mentioned communism and Zionism, and you were trying to say that when you do something, it's for yourself. What was your point?
I'm saying any person who's fighting for any certain cause, okay, they deep down have something they want to gain from it too. Because
isn't that true of everything?
Yeah, it's true. It is true of everything.
They
because people.
Too.
It is true. That is true. But I'm saying people don't do things that are totally, okay, no, just based on the mind. Everyone needs to have something to gain from it.
Okay, I guess I just felt a little bit like when you said Zionism, it felt like you were diminishing.
Oh no! I'm just saying, any philosophy that you want to fight for, right? Okay. No one functions just because I believe in this. Because even if we say that deep down, it's because we have something we want to gain from it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't mean to put Zionism with communism or anything like that. I didn't mean it that way. Thank you, but. Yeah, but that's a human being's function. You know, we can't function totally in intellect. We're not. You know, we have our own needs. And if I'm going to risk my life for anything and put anything on the line, that means that I want to gain from it. I have some pleasure to gain from it. I have something I want to gain out of this concept.
No. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else?